offering real-time, face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
New face, new features, same great resource. The latest news affecting the federal community is just one click away. Find it at federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Darren Ash, the Deputy Executive Director for Corporate Management at the NRC. Good morning, Darren. How are you?
Good morning, John. Thank you for having me today.
Wanted to get someone in the studio who gives who can give maybe an overview of a lot of the topics. As you probably know, I'll do a deep dive on agile software development, then talk about VOIP, then talk about mobile, then talk about SharePoint, and we do all these little silos and categories. I thought maybe we get someone who can give us a 30,000-foot view, and that's going to be you, Darren.
Good. Thank you.
So I'm going to have every topic in the whole federal government. You're going to give me your opinion, and we're going to get you in trouble sooner or later.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, looking forward to the unemployment line. What I'd like to start off with is just maybe give the listeners some of your background, your education, how you wound up working for the NRC, and some of the basic reasons why you chose to work for this agency.
Sure. Actually, it's one of the best places to work in the federal government, which is one of the things I enjoy. I've been working for the federal government, serving this country for about 20 years. I'm very proud of it. Prior to the NRC, I was at the Department of Transportation, Department of Treasury. I've been at the NRC now for about 4.5 years. Serving in multiple capacities, but my primary one is as the Chief Information Officer, and very much enjoy it. My background, non-traditional, Master of Public Administration. I got that from Syracuse, but then I went on to get my Master of Science in Information Systems Technology from George Washington. So I've got a nice business and IT type of background. I did not grow up in the tech field. Mm-hmm. Was never a programmer, never installed servers, so that is not my background. But my interest, particularly coming into the NRC, is having a strong team, knowledgeable, capable individuals that can be successful. My interest, my objective is what can I do to make them successful?
In the last 2 months, I've had two CTOs on the air here. Both were English majors. So I tell my daughter, you know, Brittany, there's hope. You know, I mean, you know, just because you know something doesn't mean you can articulate it or defend it in a group situation, which I think is a skill that everyone has to have, whether they're in the federal government or raising a family.
And that's right. I think a lot of it, what I've learned, and I think I learned from some very good people through my career, it gets down to leadership.
Right, and communication is part of it, so that's
correct.
Important. So, NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Give us a snapshot when it started, what size it is, and where you folks are located.
Sure. We're located out at in Rockville, out near White Flint Metro. We're about a 4,000-person agency, about $1 billion budget. So we're not the size and scope, obviously, of agencies such as DHS or VA. About two-thirds of our staff are in the Rockville, Bethesda, Maryland area. The rest of our employees are spread out across the country, either in our regional offices. We have 4 regional offices, our training center down in Chattanooga, Tennessee. But we also have staff at each of the major nuclear power plants, fuel facilities. Those are our resident inspectors. The agency itself has been around for, I think, about 36 years. I think we were 1975. We were split off. Really created by an act of Congress out of the genesis of the Atomic Energy Commission.
That's great.
And our responsibility is to regulate really all things on a civilian side for nuclear.
You know, when whenever you move, and I'm sure you've gone through moves with your family, and what happens is you always get boxes. Now, what can you throw out? What can you not throw out? What's the best practice for this? What have I used? And normally you wind up cleaning things. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to have you in here is because you're obviously on top of all the initiatives the federal government want you to move to the cloud, be more efficient, maybe have some interest in agile software methodology. In this transition, you can explain more, but you've made a transition moving to a newer facility. And this, I think, by nature, is going to force you to take and apply some of these principles because you have the opportunity to change during this transition.
Right. And John, you were referring to, we're building our third headquarters building, basically across the street. It will be a LEED Silver building, which is something that we should be very proud of. But from a technology perspective, it is part of our initiative for data center consolidation. And for us, it's looking not just for the infrastructure of the building, and for that, what I would be emphasizing is what do we need to set up an infrastructure that sustains us for many years to come? The cabling, the wiring, everything that we need to do, especially with the growth that we see in video, in capacity and what we need. But from a data center perspective, what do we need to do to ensure that we've got the appropriate, obviously, cooling, but we do it the right way, with an emphasis, obviously, on green.
You know, Darren, you have two master's degrees, so you obviously are on top of many of these concerns. And my question to you is, we have listeners that are a lot smarter than you and me combined, and they're pretty well, you know, conversant with data consolidation best practices and LEED. Tell me, what surprised you about this move? Is there something that, you know, you had your list of best practices and you started to scratch your head and say, well, I never thought I'd have to do this?
I think the thing that struck me early on, A, we know that it was important for us to move. I know what the condition is of our existing data center. But I think for me, it was just amazing to see what options are out there in terms of best practices, in terms of how to best efficiently and cost effectively cool a data center. Absolutely amazed me just in terms of our research, all the different options that are available out there.
It's amazing. I've had people from agencies in here who've been responsible for managing data warehouses, and they inevitably always say, John, I've spent 10 years learning TCP/IP and different software systems and connections, and now I'm up on the roof with a thermometer. And I didn't train. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a civil engineer, but I've got to learn all. It's like you're fully competent in one thing, and now you transition into, oh, no, here's this thermometer, and we got to figure out what we're going to do with this. And you have to take, you know, I guess, logic and maybe an ability to articulate a problem into a whole new realm.
That's right. And I think the biggest challenge is, I mean, we traditionally think of, well, the power's free. Well, we know it's not free. It's being paid for by somebody within the organization. And what are you doing as a CIO? What are you doing as an IT organization to save the agency money and, again, do the right thing?
Did you have to come to a point where you're trying to scratch your head and go, well, now should we retain this service within house, or should we go to the cloud, or should we go to a public cloud, or did that come in when you were transitioning here?
I think that the cloud, virtualization, all those types of things have to factor into what we're going to do. I think that our view is there's some things that will naturally remain and should be in our data center. There's other things that we're going to have to make that business case, make that decision. What makes the most sense to go to a cloud? What should be virtualized? And so forth. What should be outsourced? What should go to another location?
You just touched briefly on the concept of videos and huge amount of storage required for videos. That might be a candidate for maybe putting in the cloud and not retaining at home.
I 100% agree.
And as far as videos go, are these training videos, or what kind of videos for the? Are these just informational videos? Or I'm fascinated.
I think I look at videos two ways. One is and we could talk about social media, but use of YouTube. And that stuff that we would use, videos that we would use to better educate our stakeholders, the public, about what we do, about different issues. But I also see videos as things that we use to better educate our staff. It could be about announcements from our chairman. It could be information or training on a specific subject, a technical subject or a non-technical subject. Those are very easy and very logical ways to do it. It doesn't have to reside within a box or a server within our data center.
And you produce these yourselves? You have someone else produce these? Or what's the production approach to this?
It's a mix. I mean, obviously, our public affairs office is deeply involved in it. What we've learned from the YouTube, and I imagine other organizations have faced that as well, is, A, you want to do it right. It needs to be professional. But you also want to make sure it meets all the different requirements in terms of those individuals that may be deaf or hard of hearing. You want to make sure that they're able to see it and hear what's going to be said or understand what's being said.
You know, one of the fellows I follow on Twitter is a guy named Matt Cutts, C-U-T-T-S, and he is lead technical at Google, and he doesn't come up with a piece of paper in the mail. When he makes announcements, he says, hey, this afternoon we're going to have a two-minute video on how to transfer a website address. And that's how it's done. It's not even the idea of a piece of paper press release being put in the mail. It's not even – doesn't even enter his brain.
But it's a leap for individuals. If we're always been focused on a technical piece of paper, a memo, those types of things, just an announcement on our internal website – that's a big leap to go into a video and type of thinking. It's one that we're making that progression towards. But I think one of the things I very much enjoy and appreciate about our agency is even as we do it, even as we experiment, we learn from it and continue to improve.
And you have to, because I think with the new generation that's coming in, for example, my daughter and I had this conversation. She hates going to the bank, going face-to-face. She wants to do everything online. And maybe who the younger generation, the under 40, under 30 crowd, would much prefer a YouTube two-minute video on something than reading something or actually, heaven forbid, going face-to-face.
Yeah, we define it as the page turners, the PowerPoint slide, the PowerPoint slides that you just flip through. I think there's better ways to do it. Different people learn differently.
We're going to have to take a break. We come back, talk about best practices in the NRC for making transitions in the IT world and many other worlds. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Darren Ash, Deputy Executive Director for Corporate Management at the NRC.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TEKSystems.com.
In an era of fiscal constraint marked by shrinking budgets and increasing demands on services, how are local government executives leveraging innovation, common sense, and technology to make a real difference? What is New York City doing to innovatively deliver health and human services? Join host Michael Keegan as he discusses New York City's efforts with Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services of the City of New York. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Please join Jim Fleisig on Tuesday, November 15th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss cloud computing initiatives within the Department of Defense. The panel includes government leaders from the U.S. Army, U.S. Air Force, and DISA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Tuesday, November 15th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by HP Red Hat and CA Technologies.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Members of the Senate Armed Services Committee say counterfeit electronic parts, mostly from China, are flooding the supply chain for the Pentagon. Investigators have found more than 1,800 cases containing more than 1 million suspected parts. Senators Carl Levin and John McCain said the counterfeit parts endanger U.S. troops, and they cost taxpayers money, and they are, quote, just the tip of the iceberg. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Over land and water, in our ports and at our points of entry, EADS North America provides critical solutions and systems that protect our borders and coastlines. Our vigilance is unwavering. Our commitment is steadfast. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
How can federal agencies drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for maximizing efficiency in federal programs? Join HUD Secretary Sean Donovan and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, the Efficiency Imperative, on November 17th in Washington, D.C. Register today to save 35% at www.excelgov.com.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Darren Ash, Deputy Executive Director for Corporate Management at the NRC. We're going to be pulling up to about 20, 30,000 feet and looking at a lot of different issues from the perspective of someone who has to manage these issues for an organization, or at least assist in managing, and come with some good policies about social media, about making a transition to the cloud, physically moving assets to a location, making sure they comply with security. And we touched on this whole idea of social media earlier in the show. Let's go back to this whole idea of blogging and Twitter feeds and Facebook. And so what's your take on it? Do you think these activities can help promote the agenda for your agency?
I'd absolutely agree. And I think we were, I think if you had looked at our website back in December, you would have noticed something very striking. There was no link to YouTube, no link to a public blog, no link to LinkedIn, not LinkedIn, but Twitter and so forth. I mean, all the Flickr, whatever all the different sites are, there were none. Yet we recognized as an agency and organization that we needed to move in that direction. Our interest, the way we tend to approach things, is we want to make sure we do it right. And so we took the effort, the extra time to think through things, everything from a records perspective, security perspective, privacy, all the things we want to make sure we do right, rules of behavior, negotiate it with the union. We went live with our first public blog back in January, and it paid significant dividends. And that was, we wanted to learn from it, and that was our objective. How it paid dividends is during the event in Japan, the Fukushima event.
You were all set for that, weren't you? Yeah.
We were all set for it. And frankly, that was one of the primary means for the public to learn more about what we were doing. And what astonished our public affairs officers were, with nothing else to drive anybody to that, there were no tweets. We were in the thousands and thousands upon thousands of views on a daily basis during that event, with nothing to drive individuals to that.
Well, you fire up your Google box, you type in nuclear safety. I want to see what the big dog has to say. What's the NRC have to say? That's what everyone wants to know.
So we used it effectively. We also learned how could we use effectively things like YouTube, Twitter. And we knew that we needed to move in that direction. We recently launched those channels. But for us, we have to communicate and be transparent with the public and our stakeholders. We have other channels to do it. And by channels, I mean significant number of public meetings with the public, be it on-site, different locations across the country, the different social media channels. The business case was this is a legitimate and appropriate way for us to better educate and keep our public, the public and our stakeholders informed. And things like YouTube, the way I characterize it is an easy way for us to explain a very extremely highly technical and complex subject in a different medium that people can understand.
So when your blogger, one of the bloggers there posts something, does it have to go through several clearances, or what's the step-by-step process for posting a blog?
We, again, going back to the way we wanted to do it in terms of trying to do it right, we did we did a lot of training. We have a number of individuals across the agency that are bloggers, and that stuff is, again, it's vetted through our public affairs office, but ultimately those individuals are writing some very technical things, again, from a plain writing type perspective. It is a moderated blog, so we do accept and we do post comments and questions, and we do respond to those.
In my world, we always say if you can measure it, you can monitor it and all this kind of stuff. And is there a tool that you use to monitor these different types of social activities, Twitter? And there's a lot of them out there. I don't know if there's one that you've chosen to use.
I'm not aware of any particular tool. I think a lot of what we've got in terms of what our success is, obviously traffic is one way to monitor that. But I think it's the reaction, the responsiveness, and the types of questions and the level of detail, the complexity of the types of questions and comments we get, that people have latched onto it and see it as a legitimate way to interact with us, another way to interact with the NRC.
You know, I was here in the studio when the earthquake hit, and I'm trying to think of what good things came out of that. But I think as far as the tragedy in Japan goes, there is something that came out of that. Is it because you got to test some social media activities, and guess what? They were accurate, and I don't know when the next Japan's going to hit, but it sounds like NRC is positioned to be able to respond to questions about any type of emergencies.
And I think it gets down to agility, and I think agility and responsiveness, and I think we see these types of medium, not just our press releases, because that's a normal way for an organization, public or private, to communicate with the public, obviously the news media, but these are another means, another media to communicate very quickly.
Now what... This is going to sound like a dumb question, but an organization like the NRC, I mean, they're dealing with some very, very heavy, serious topics. I mean, I understand that. What would you possibly tweet? Would you possibly, well, Darren has a new tie today? I mean, what kind of lighthearted topics would you tweet about nuclear regulations? I mean, come on.
In all seriousness, I think it's an emphasis on specific inspection reports. It could be that. It could be a public meeting that's coming up. Being held with the commission. It could be one that's being held locally. If we look at it from an incident response perspective, legitimate way for us to use tweets is to keep the public informed, our followers, about what's going on with that particular incident. So there's a lot of legitimate and business-centric ways that we can use it. And again, getting to that goal of what do we need to do to keep our public, the nation's public, and our stakeholders informed.
When I was in the studio when the earthquake hit, you know, people were downtown and they were tweeting and tweets were getting through and some of the phone calls weren't. I think from your perspective, the NRC can take advantage of that by providing information. You may be able to tweet out and say, if you want more information on this specific incident, click, go to this blog.
That's right.
And then you go to the blog and go, hey, if you want to do another deep dive, click to the white paper. Then you, another deep dive. It all depends on how much information you want. I mean, if you're a journalist, you'll want a lot of information. If you just scratch your head going, what are my guys doing? You can choose your news.
Right. And for us, it's learning from what other organizations have done. What are the best practices out there? And I think that's a lot of what the NRC tries to do, which is learn from that and then adapt it.
I think they're going to be learning from you. They're going to say, okay, Darren, you seem to get lucky with this thing. Now, what can we do? And that's the reason why I have you in the studio here. So my listeners who are Googling this on Thanksgiving and trying to come up with a policy and how can they use social media, maybe they can gain some insight from the challenge that you had. And where'd you stand? Were you a delay on the blog or were you encouraging the blog? Or where'd you stand in just the managerial decision to start the blog?
We knew that we needed to do a blog. Actually, I think blog, we decided was probably going to be the easiest way to do it. And we finally did it. The first blog was from our chairman, and the chairman blogs periodically, but it's a variety of other folks within the agency, both on the technical side, but also on the IT side, or human resources side, and so forth.
Going from, lighthearted blogs to the more serious aspect of green initiatives and coming up with a new facility that complies with a lot of different standards. Have you found the standards changed from the time you try to implement the plan for the transition, or have they pretty much, I'm thinking of agile methodology and being agile social media and agile with developing a new data center. Did it change much, or did they pretty much fall in line with what you predicted?
I think it fell in line. I think what it's going to do, and I just think about some of the trends, what I'm seeing out there in terms of how we look at technology, how we look at everything from servers, is are there some things that we could do differently? We had an approach. We have we made some decisions in terms of obviously with the data center, how we're going to cool it, so forth. But I think where I think we're going to be challenged is are there things we can think differently? How can we think differently about the boxes, the servers, and the applications? Ultimately, the applications that will reside in that data center. Is that an opportunity to do something different? Not just to forklift a bunch of boxes over, but to do something radical.
We just have about another minute or two left in the interview here. Crystal ball time. NRC are going to make the transition to a new facility. Where do you see yourselves placed in the next 4 to 5 years? What kind of opportunities are you waiting to jump into, like you waited for the blog and social media? Anything else you're waiting to jump into in the next few years, or where do you see yourselves going?
I think the big issue that we're going to be facing is the consumerization of IT. We see that with all the different products out there. What do we need to do differently for our workforce and also those that interact with us? How do we change our applications? How do we make them easier? Not just effective, but easier for those individuals to use, as well as mobile devices. How do we accommodate and adapt to that new environment? Those are probably if I think about the big items that we're going to be grappling with, those are ones we're starting with now.
Thank you very much for the interview today, Darren. We're going to have to take a break now and get back to a different subject completely after the break. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Darren Ash, Deputy Executive Director of Corporate Management for the NRC.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. While there are some who revel in the snow and cold, others are not quite as fond of it. But is it possible to actually be allergic to cold or snow?
It would be very unusual for someone to actually be allergic to snow itself. But there are a variety of allergic type symptoms and reactions that can occur during cold weather and even during snow.
The symptoms, according to Mayo Clinic asthma and allergy specialist Dr. James Lee, include itching or hives or welts involving the skin. Cold weather can also trigger the nasal lining to produce excess mucus and also sneezing.
Another related condition is sneezing or itchy eyes that can be provoked by sunlight. And it's possible that in a colder weather with snow and reflected light that someone might have some sneezing there.
Now, this doesn't mean it's time to pack the bags and move south, but limiting your cold exposure will help. For Medical Edge, I'm Vivian Williams.
So you blew it. You ate the donut. You slept in and skipped your workout. You had that second helping, went a little overboard at the buffet, hit the candy jar at the office a little too hard. You forgot to put safety first. You didn't eat your vegetables. You didn't even open that bottle of vitamins you bought. You accidentally left your gym bag at home. Your favorite machine was broken at the gym. Instead of your water bottle, you chugged a 2-liter of soda. You couldn't help yourself. You had a craving, or you simply couldn't resist. But you know what? It's okay. Two steps forward and one step back is still one step forward. One slip up isn't going to undo all that good work. So don't be afraid to embrace your setbacks and do whatever it takes to keep trying. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe the more you keep trying, the better chance you have to turn bad habits into good ones. Because we think it's never too late to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Cloud Conundrum, Public, Private, or Both, a panel discussion with experts from government and industry, sponsored by Brocade. Panelist Chris Smith, CIO of USDA.
Internally, we stood up our own private cloud offerings as we were doing data center consolidation. I started out by saying it was an evolution. 2 years ago, we knew the value that was in sharing compute, getting higher virtualization levels, getting a more secure platform. So we've been on that path. We've seen a 60% reduction in operating expenses. And that's huge. And we look at our rates every year to say, okay, are we competitive within the government space? We're cross-servicing other folks.
Cloud innovations are here. Is your network optimized? Accelerate to the cloud with Brocade's new technology and business models. Brocade's cloud-optimized solutions provide a foundation to help organizations migrate to private clouds. What does this mean to your agency? Increased utilization, simplified management, and an agile organization. That's why Brocade solutions are used in over 90% of global 1,000 data centers. Learn how Brocade will transition your organization to a virtualized world. Go to federalnewsradio.com. Search Cloud.
Quest Government Services is now CenturyLink Government. CenturyLink is positioned to support your mission objectives and provide you with an enhanced product and service portfolio. With our global reach, expanded nationwide network, and strong financial standing, we are the partner for IT leaders looking toward a stronger, more connected tomorrow. Your link to the future begins here. See the benefits of partnering with us at CenturyLink.com/federal.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
Let's look at Roanoke, Virginia, with its great railroad history and active arts scene. Roanoke actually has more restaurants than any other Virginia city per capita, so it's a great place for foodies as well. The tourism folks in the Roanoke Valley have put together more than 20 great packages at hotels from the luxurious to the most affordable. I've stayed at many of those places, and I can tell you they are great. There's plenty to do down there. Whether your interest is history or culture or outdoor activities, you'll find a package that's for you. Check out visitroanokeva.com under special offers to find out more about all of these.
And can we still win that cruise you've been talking about?
Yes, but you have to enter this week. Check the details in the November Recreation News or at recreationnews.com to win that Royal Caribbean cruise to the Bahamas.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Federalnewsradio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome to John Gilroy here with Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're speaking with Darren Ash, who's the president of an organization called Affirm. Good morning, Darren. How are
you? Good morning, John.
Well, I'm going to give you an opportunity to define what Affirm is all about.
Thank you, John. Yeah, Affirm is not A-F-I-R-M. It's A-F-F-I-R-M. It's the Association for Federal Information Resources Management. It's an organization that was created, established in 1979, so we've been around over 30 years. It is a unique organization. It is our objective, our purpose is to better educate and improve how we manage, in this case, the federal government, manages IT, how we manage information resources. And this is a unique organization in that it is both, it includes both those individuals from the public sector as well as the private sector, those within the IT community.
You know, what's amazing is if you look at just the month of October in 2011, there are 140 federal events going on. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you could just quit your job and just go to events morning, noon, and night. You might get some free goodies there, but it's hard to figure out what event to go to and why. And I think that's why I wanted to bring you in here, talk about a firm and what is a differentiator. Well, you've been around since 79. I mean, you're either lucky or smart or you got the right programs that people want to respond to. And my experience has been is that if you build it, they will come. If you have a reasonable program that will help listeners solve problems, then they're going to show up. And I think that's the whole idea behind it.
And that is the whole idea. And I think there's one other differentiator. I know there's other organizations that do this as well, but I think one of the things that we're proud of is in terms of what we do with the proceeds from these types of events. Obviously, one of the things we do is we host luncheons, and the luncheons are typically panel events, different speakers, often from government agencies, talking on a variety of topics. It could be on agility, agile computing, data center consolidation, mobility, any wide range of things that we know that a federal manager, an IT manager, is grappling with. What can we learn? What can they learn from best practices? We use these resources, the proceeds, towards scholarships and fellowships. And a lot of that thinking behind that is that's our next generation of the IT workforce, whether they work for the government or work for the private sector. We need to grow that next generation. And so we've been very proud of the monies we've given to several different universities.
I've been to several Affirm meetings, and the last one I was at, I was sitting next to a gentleman from a private institution, and I tried to exchange business cards with him. He said, "I don't have a business card. I'm not here to meet people. I'm here to find out more about the topic." I mean, I think that's the differentiator in the audience is you may have people from commercial organizations or agencies, but they're there to learn about agile software development or data consolidation or using Facebook for your agency. It's very focused on that topic.
And I found that to be very true. I attended the luncheon we had a few weeks ago on agile computing. We're not a big player within the organization I work in agile computing. We had some wonderful speakers, an individual from FBI, DOD, USDA, and GSA. And it's great to be able to sit there and listen to what some of their challenges are, some of their best practices. And for me, what could we do? What can I – and I learn. And that's one of the things that I've appreciated as an attendee to many of these luncheons is I learned something new.
I'll say what people are thinking. Strange bedfellows. I mean, you get four of those people in the room. Wouldn't they go to different corners of the room and come after each other with sticks or something? I mean, the FBI – and it seems like, you know – no one's got all the information, no one has all the answers, but if you get four people from four completely different agencies, put them in a room together and ask them the same question, you know, sooner or later, you're going to come up with some kind of accurate response.
And I think the thing that I very much enjoy is, especially with a number of these lunches, is just not just the fun they have up on stage, but even some of the controversy they may stir up. I think the lunches or the events and any number of events that I go to, the last thing you want, if you're going to spend your time and spending dollars to go to an event, to a training session, you want it to be worthwhile, but you also want in some ways to be entertaining. You want to be able to enjoy it and know that the individuals up on stage are actually enjoying themselves and talking about and are excited about the topics that they're covering.
And if you're listening to this and have a specific technical problem and you want to see a presentation, you can go to the website affirm.org and find out about past programs and future programs, and they touch on all the things. Now, if I were an agency and knew that in the next 6-8 months I had to make a big change, like a physical move, like moving to a data warehouse, or my boss was twisting my arm to move to agile software development, or I heard that guy Darren and he, you know, he's done some creative things with social media, and maybe I should use social media in my agencies. Let me find out what mistakes he made so that I don't make. That's what I want to find out.
And that's what I'd love for our luncheons, our events, to be able to convey. And I think one of the upsides is the number of federal employees that do attend these. This is not just the private sector that attends these types of lunches, but you want to be able to connect those individuals. I may never have met or have known about the individual from the FBI or from USDA. Now I do. And that's an opportunity for me able to reach out to that individual and maybe post some deeper questions to him offline.
What's interesting is we'll talk about the fellow from the FBI. He's working with agile software development at the Federal Bureau over there. Now, what's interesting is that he isn't a 20-year govy. He was in the commercial world for several years. He's just been at the FBI for 3 or 4 years. And so he has, when you have that injection of a different culture, it makes things uncomfortable. But you know what? Maybe more productive.
Agreed.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It was kind of good. Other topics. Let's talk more about data warehousing and moving to different data centers. You had a program on that. I imagine you had some input on structuring that program.
Yeah, we did. And actually, that was one we did with another organization, GuyTech. And our interest, it was a longer program. It was not a typical lunch. It was more like a three-quarter type of day type program. And we had probably the broadest range of agencies I've ever seen up on stage, not at one time, but spread out through the day. And really getting all the different perspectives, both from the military side, civilian side, and so forth. And just hearing, again, some of the common concerns, common issues, but the types of things they're all grappling with and what can we learn from them. And again, that's exciting.
And what are the next two or three topics coming up at a firm?
We've got, in November, we've got an exciting one about the changing role of the federal CIO. Not the federal CIO, but the changing role of federal CIOs. Maybe that's a better way to say it. That's in November. And then I think in December, we've got one about government acquisition trends and techniques. It's about the different types of large type contracts that are out there, particularly those that are run by NASA and GSA.
And find out more about them. What about the changing role of the federal CIO? Obviously, because you're the president of a firm, you've had some input in the planning and maybe trying to figure out what topics to handle on that. What areas do you think you're going to cover in this meeting?
I think the things that that the CIOs are all grappling with, it gets back to, for the listeners, knowing that there was a memo that came from the director of OMB back in August out to all the agencies about here are our expectations in terms of what we're looking for. And for some agencies, I would imagine it is different. It may be a radical change. It could delve in the areas of budget authority, cybersecurity. What are your responsibilities? What should you be doing as a federal IT leader within your organization? And how is it affecting you both in terms of your leadership capability, but also how are you working within the organization?
And if last year's question was Vivek Kundra's 25 points, I think federal CIOs have to ask, what about those 25 points and are they going to change? And from your perspective, Aaron, what do you think is going to happen with those?
I think the latest read I've gotten from hearing about Mr. Van Roekel, who is our federal CIO, is I don't see a radical change, significant change in terms of the 25-point plan. Even when I read that, there were a lot of practical concepts, things that we need to be doing, we should be doing, whether they were in our 25-point plan or not. There will be continuity, and I think an institutionalization. I think for the interest of us, even if there wasn't a 25-point plan, I think it's in all our best interests as for the CIOs to do it and to implement, to make sure that we are doing the right things and ultimately making sure that we have successful IT projects.
I think one has to wonder if a historian looks at these few years here, if they look back and see Vivek as doing something that's substantial and has impact over years, or it's just kind of a flash in the pan. I think time will tell.
That's right. I think the things that will be interesting to see how they progress, not on the practical side. I think from how we look at projects, how we chunk them out, how we look at our acquisition workforce, those are things we need to do. I think the things that I think a lot of agencies, at least what I'm observing, are paying attention to and are curious to see how we progress as a collective body is cloud. I mean, that's a big one. How we deal with FedRAMP, what we're going to have to do to adapt, and how far we're going to progress.
We come back, we have more discussion about Affirm. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Darren Ash, who is the president of Affirm, AFFIRM.
Previously on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, there was a special panel conversation about the F-35 program. Discussing the mission of the program is Tom Burbage, Executive VP and GM of F-35 Program Integration.
I think the best way to think about this is not from an air superiority standpoint, but from the multi-role missions that the airplane performs. We actually have 22, I think it is, different missions that the airplane is designed to perform, and many of them are to hold strategic targets at risk. Sometimes we get into this dialogue about nobody else has an airplane that's quite as good as ours. stars in the sky today. That's certainly true, but this airplane's principal mission is to hold a strategic target on the ground at risk, and I think everybody would agree that understands the challenge that there's been a proliferation of integrated defense systems that surround geographical, strategically important targets. Penetrating that defense system and being effective in the future going forward is a real change in requirements versus what today's airplanes are capable of doing.
To listen to the whole program, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword F-35.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Veterans Affairs says it's planning ahead to make sure it keeps pace with mobile technology. VA's approach to the development of mobile apps will be to design software that will work on a variety of different tablets and smartphones. The department says since it can't forecast which company will be dominant in the mobile field 5 years from now, it doesn't want to pump money into app development for a platform that might not last. VA's plans include the deployment of up to 100,000 new mobile devices.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
In an era of fiscal constraint marked by shrinking budgets and increasing demands on services, how are local government executives leveraging innovation, common sense, and technology to make a real difference? What is New York City doing to innovatively deliver health and human services? Join host Michael Keegan as he discusses New York City's efforts with Linda Gibbs, Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services of the City of New York. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
IT Professionals, the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council's Academy, is a unique interactive training and education program designed specifically for the federal IT community, both government and industry. Courses in leadership, best practices, and project management start soon, so don't wait. Register today at www.actgov.org/academy. That's www.actgov.org/academy.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio. Please join me this week for my special guest, Doug Wolford, President and Chief Operating Officer of Convergent Wealth Advisors. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area and clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Donating to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities is an easy way to champion a cause. With every payroll deduction, you can be a knight in shining armor battling childhood diabetes or illiteracy, or a fairy godmother granting job skills, elder care, or shelter from domestic abuse. Choose CFC code 31408 and be a superhero to those in need in our community. No cape required. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
As an increased number of government agencies transform to a cloud infrastructure, IT is being viewed less as a product buy and more as a service. From acquisition and procurement to the SLAs that map them, the transition to storage, email, and infrastructure as a service stands to rewrite the basic processes of federal IT. Join AFSEA Bethesda and Dave McClure, the associate administrator at GSA, on November 16th at the Bethesda North Marriott to discuss how agencies are managing this transition. Register today at afseabethesda.org/NOVBreakfast.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on The Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Darren Ash, who's the president of Affirm, AFFIRM. You can go to affirm.org and get more information. It is a group been around for 30 years, and it puts together programs to help federal IT professionals just try to figure out what's going on, huh?
Yes.
That's our motto. We're trying to help you figure it out.
You've done a good job simplifying that. Thank you.
And during the break, we were talking about the type of guests you have. And you're very careful. I think the organization likes to have federal IT people who have experienced data warehousing structures or agile software development or government acquisition, have them get in front of the group and be able to respond and go back and forth. And if you're in the audience here, you can go up to them afterwards and say, well, this is my specific problem. Maybe you can give me insight on this.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think for the attendees for our lunches, you have a mix, again, of industry as well as the federal employees. And I think for the federal employees, I think it's great for them to hear from their peers, from the leaders within the federal family, and to be able to connect. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that's one thing we should be proud of.
And I like the connection. I think we know about social networking and connecting, and there's ways to do efficiently and not efficiently. But I like face-to-face because if you ask someone a question face-to-face, you have some nuances that you're not necessarily going to get through email, definitely not through Twitter, and maybe things can be communicated that may not be communicated in official capacity. How's that for a discreet statement?
That's very good.
Hey, what do you think of the food in that restaurant there? Well, that restaurant's on Wisconsin Avenue. Well, what kind of an answer is that? Well, I think I got a 100-word answer to that simple question about the restaurant. Speaking of simple questions, we have 10 simple questions for you here, Darren, to find out if you, in fact, are a card-carrying nerd. I know there's some listeners wondering, go, well, maybe that Darren isn't really a nerd, but we're going to find out because I have a scientific test here. 10 questions, you're going to have to answer them all honestly. Then we rate you and we put you in the category, and then whatever happens.
And I know that I'm going to unequivocally embarrass myself with this one. So,
okay, year of your first computer.
My first computer, I forget, it was probably 1982. It was a Commodore 64.
That's
whatever year that was.
That's a pretty good year. That's a pretty good nerd point.
Yeah, we had fun programming games on that one.
Yeah. Year of your first cell phone.
I probably the 92, 93.
That's reasonably nerdy. That's no problem with that. Operating system on your machines at home?
Windows.
Okay. Type of home, anything fancy? Just standard Fios, TSL?
Cable.
Yeah, okay, standard stuff. What type of mobile phone do you have?
This is where I'm going to start to embarrass myself. A plain, it makes calls type of phone.
That's called a feature phone. Okay.
And I wouldn't even say there's many features on it.
you're drowning pretty quickly here. I'm trying to tell you something, but you're drowning here.
I'm going to be at the bottom by
how many apps are on your feature phone?
Zero.
Zero apps. Okay. Well, the meter's going slowly towards the cool guy side, but we're trying to get you back to the nerd side. Do you own any tablet devices?
I don't. My kids do.
Well, my kids do. Come on. That's not going to work. That's no points for you on that one. Social networking sites you participate in?
LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. Well, that's good. And here's the real...
I get at least one credit right now.
One nerd point here. And the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Paper.
Jeez. I want to call you a nerd. I can't call you a card-carrying nerd here. You had such a good start, you know? That
I'm sorry I let you down, John.
Had a real good start. I thought you were down the road to pocket protector and, you know, I guess the beard and barefoot. Well, you do wear shoes, so you're technically not a nerd. But
and there's no holes in the shoes either.
No holes in the shoes, and you got to argue for 10 hours over ridiculous topics. And then you'd be actually a card-carrying nerd. We'll have to put this into the computer and come up with your exact rating because we know how important that is. Going from a frivolous subject to a more serious subject here is the future of a firm and where you see it headed. Do you see it headed more in terms of the half-day, full-day programs? Do you see it headed in terms of two- or three-day programs, weekend-type events? Or where do you think it's going to be headed the next few years?
I think the bread and butter, thank you for that question. I think the bread and butter still will be our lunches. I think that's something that a firm has been known for. There's other organizations that put on breakfast, evening events, and so forth. But lunches have proven to be successful, especially if you hold them downtown. You're able to get a good mix of individuals, both from the private sector as well as the public sector. I see us doing other types of events. If part of our focus is fundraising, you also want to have different types of events that recognize our sponsors, but also are legitimate ways for us to raise funds for scholarships and fellowships, but also make it topical. And from our government employee, want to attend, government executive want to attend. So it's going to be a mix of things. I can't see us really doing much on the weekend. I think the recognition is our folks, our sponsors, all of us have lives and families, and we want to be able to spend time with them.
You know, what's fascinating is that 5 years ago, had I put you in the seat there and asked you about the future, you probably wouldn't have talked about blogs, NRC, and talked about social media. But when things came around and changed, you adapted to that. I think that's the key thing with looking at the future of organizations like this is all you can really say is, well, we'll kind of see what's happening in 6 months, and we'll pivot from there, because who could have predicted Twitter?
You have to be able to really do your research, but be astute, and you have to be a good listener. I think for us, it's having our ears to what the federal community is asking, what our concerns are. The bonus on about a firm is our board is made up of a strong mix of both of individuals from federal agencies and the private sector. And we're a great source collectively of what are the issues that we need to grapple with and to make sure that our topics, our lunch topics or events that we've got are able to hit the mark and answer, frankly, even our questions.
Well, I'm going to ask a frank question, and you can run out of the studio screaming. But are there topics you don't want to touch on? It's things that are too sensitive.
Oh, is this where I get to run out?
I mean, if there are, there are. If you don't want to talk about this,
no,
fine.
I'm sure there's
maybe security concerns, or we can't really talk about them in public. I don't know. There's something.
I think pretty much. My gut is everything's on topic. I mean, I think about security. I wouldn't want to get obviously the classified side, but I think there's a broad issues, everything from continuous monitoring. If I stay on the security side, continuous monitoring that agencies are grappling with. I'd love to be able to touch on topics about culture, about leadership, things that would make an IT organization successful. How do you become a better partner to the business side of the agency? I don't think there's anything untouchable.
I brought that up because there was a guy from the FBI who was at your last meeting. I mean, you know, from my perspective is, what the heck are they letting him out of that room? Why would they let him out to talk in front of a group of people like this? It's just that, because I work for a commercial company, I don't know the sensitivities, and I don't know how insensitive it was to bring in someone from the FBI to talk about things like this. It depends on what the topic is.
I think it's good to get that broad. I mean, if you always had certain organizations always represent on a panel, that's a bad thing. If you've got that crosscut of agencies that are in the D.C., obviously in the area, D.C., Baltimore area, you want that good mix. You want to know that you've got good representation. I just attended a conference this last week, and it was a mix of both public, private, nonprofit. I mean, a whole mix of organizations, my peer group, the folks within the IT community all across the country. And it was neat to hear, in some ways disconcerting to hear, we're all in the same boat. We're all grappling with the same types of issues, whether you're in manufacturing or you're in state and local education. We're all dealing with these same types of issues, and we all can learn from each other.
And I think I suffered from pigeonholing a firm. I thought, well, a firm, civilian agencies. Well, guess what? Look at that panel. There was a DOD guy in the panel, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you are in the DOD and listening to this and want to, walk on the wild side or maybe see what some other agency, doesn't mean that your experience isn't going to be justified and validated. Maybe your experience with a defense agency will be warmly encouraged from the people at the firm.
Right.
Other organizations you think are worth value, maybe a meeting. You said you just had a commercial meeting of organizations or groups you think of value for my listeners that might want to participate in.
I think the other one, and this is something I don't think I mentioned at the beginning, which is the American Council for Technology.
ACT.
ACT, and actgov.org, actgov.org. It's another nonprofit. A firm is actually an affiliated organization underneath ACT. And ACT's mission, ACT has been around just as long as a firm, if not longer. Same type of concept. Put on some very big conferences, one that's coming up this weekend.
Probably longer than the short lunches.
Longer, yeah. But it's a much larger community, broader reach, and it's that ACT is not necessarily focused on the lunches, the types of things we do, but they're focused on some very discrete projects. They had one of their, I think one of the most recent bright shining moments was the effort and the work that the ACT IAC community did to support VA on the Vista project. We've also done some work to support the federal CIO, in this case Vivek, but also Danny Werfel on the finance side.
Great. We have to end the interview here. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we had Darren Ash, who's the president of AFFIRM, Affirm, and you can go to their website at affirm.org.
been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Continuing congressional coverage is brought to you by United Technologies, among the top 100 public companies in Barron's latest ranking of the world's most respected companies. More at utc.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick,
CNN Radio, I'm Andy Rose. A planned press conference from Penn State football coach Joe Paterno has just been canceled after the school says the coach